All right, y'all, it's spring, and you know what that means. It's time to start planning our summer festival traveling. Yep, it's time to get into my Airbnb bag cross-country, a.k.a. Time to visit my homes all across the country. And you know what I never think about? Why not list my own spot on Airbnb and host some folks at my house? I mean, my house is cute. Yes, let's make money while we're spending money. Just trying to help you out, man, because your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code. A lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant. AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio.
What's up, everybody? This is Sugar Steve from Questlove Supreme. We are back with part two of our conversation with the incredible Erica Alexander. If you have not heard part one, please check that out before this. In that episode, Erica spoke about her upbringing, living in Arizona and New Mexico before moving to Philly. She really opened up about her experiences playing Cousin Pam on The Cosby Show and Maxine on Living Single, two very memorable roles. One thing I want to add, too, is that you won't hear me or One thing I want to add, too, is that you won't hear me or unpaid bill in this part, too, because One thing I want to add, too, is that you won't hear me or unpaid bill in this part, too, because there
So here's the thing. When, of course, it's revealed that, you know, Living Single's main sort of influence, of course, being right. Yeah. And you've talked about this time and time again about Friends. But I do want to know, because here's the deal. I had to go to the Warner Brothers lot maybe like a month ago. I did a cameo on Abbott Elementary, which I think might be on right now as we speak. And I remember seeing an interview where you were like, yeah, you know, we were on the same lot. You know, both shows were Warner Brothers shows. And I go there now. And of course, you know, you'll go past the wherever. What do you call it? Like the buildings that they built sets, like.
The sound stages. Lord have mercy. We're not doing anything.
Right. You know, I always wanted to know what sound stage you guys were on, because they now mark off like, this is where Ozzie and Harriet and da-da-da and Friends and da-da-da. And I wanted to know where the Living Single one was. But
we weren't there. We were on the ghetto lot. I'm not kidding.
Right. So
not even in that whole area, a whole different area, location, address, you saying?
Yeah. It was something called The Ranch. And they had all the big shows, or all the shows with white casts, on the big lot. And we were on the ranch lot. We didn't have air conditioning. We staged a walkout because we didn't have craft service, correct? Or, you know, those really? Types of things. Yeah, we were hot as hell on that stage.
So, okay, when I asked the Abbott people that, like, okay, so where is this in proximity to where Friends? They were like, we are right next door to them. And they were like, that's a big deal to be right next door to where they shot Friends. And I briefly mentioned the whole Living Single thing, but then I got distracted and never got the answer. But obviously, to shoot anywhere in proximity to where Friends was means that you're going to get treated better. Like, your things work. And so you're saying that a lot of those things, you actually wanted to stage a walkout? That's crazy.
We did stage a walkout. One,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I was very political even then. I wrote a letter and I said that you have to understand, I had come off of the biggest show in the world.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I understood that we weren't going to get those types of niceties that Cosby got. But I understood when we were being treated like niggers.
Say that. Yeah. So wait,
we're the
other
number
shows
one show in America, Black and Latino household, and we didn't have any air conditioning at the time. We need to.
That's crazy.
Advocate for it. Now they wouldn't do those types of things, and it's nice to be in proximity to power and things that are, you know, in the zeitgeist. But we were over there building still for the Black people who were on those sets.
That's the sad part of the story, is that I wish you would have been able to finish that story so they understood how much of a real big deal it was to be there in that moment and who fought for them to be there, because that's fucking ridiculous.
That everybody part I know about.
Yeah. And real quick, what other shows shot at the ranch?
The Wayans Brothers.
Oh, wow.
Oh, damn.
The Wayans Brothers. And for a long time, it was mostly us. And then season three or so, the Wayans Brothers dropped in, and we had a good time with those young fellas. And then the Waltons actually came to do like a limited series. And I had done a series, something called Common Ground with Richard Thomas, and we had already been friends. So we said, oh, there goes the neighborhood. Look at all these white folks. We all got along. We all joked about it. They got it. But yeah, that's who was on that lot before they fixed it up. We were on the ranch lot. And you know
that fountain?
It's on our lot. Wow. They wanted to film around that fountain, but they didn't let us. That's why we behind the couch.
Ain't that some shit?
Wow.
The
things I learned.
Oh.
Was there any truth to the rumor that initially NBC was going to pick up the show initially before it went to Fox?
Never. Because we are a Warner Brothers show and we played on Fox.
Okay.
So Warren Littlefield, the story goes that when we made our first debut, they said, is there anything shows? If there was any show that you saw that you wished was yours, and he said, okay, a single, and he was the head of NBC. And then the next year, he created with a different team, Friends.
I never heard of the cast members' response to Jay-Z's Moonlight video. Jay-Z infamously, Alan Yang, who directed with the Aziz Ansari,
Master of None.
Masters of None. And also Maya's current series, Loot. Nice. Jay-Z got Alan Yang to basically get the Friends set to actually recreate. Do you remember this video?
I remember this.
Was it 444? Was it?
The Moonlight song on 444. What were your feelings of that? I guess once that story broke out, and then Jay-Z also gave a statement on it as well. Did you have a response to that video at all?
No, I was unaware of it.
Oh, okay. Basically, when that story got out, Jay-Z made a video in which Tessa Thompson,
Issa was in it.
Tiffany Haddish, Hannibal, and Gerard
they were friends,
Carmichael.
Right?
Basically,
I think I did see that.
Just wanted to know if you were aware of it.
Understand, and I understand that in marketing that you want to also speak to a wide audience. And if you have this huge part of the world that understands that Friends is this juggernaut, I'm sure that Jay-Z, who understands that you stand next to things you want to shine on you and vice versa, I don't think he needs to stand next to Living Single.
Okay.
And I'm not that he needs to stand next to Friends, but I get it. I get it as a branding sort of.
But was that his homage to Living Single in a way? Like, was it the flip?
Yeah,
it was supposed to feel like.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was supposed to feel like this is, we know what the real truth is. And
right.
Right.
I guess so. But it could also be seen in the opposite.
Yes, it can. Like, you're right.
You know,
you're right, huh? You're right.
Yeah. So, but I get it.
You know, at 118 episodes, I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at. In most shows, basically, if we're really being honest with ourselves, most shows are at their best during a 5-season arc, and then it gets a little shaky with season 6, 7, 8. You know, if they
unless you're Frasier, Frasier's great.
Frasier was consistent all.
Pretty,
I didn't watch.
Pretty consistent.
Yeah, I watched. Yeah, pretty consistent. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, even.
I agree with that five season arc, like the favorite, like, I mean, Breaking Bad or like The Wire, like five seasons is kind of.
It's perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're greedy. And so it's like, let's bring it for all.
Right.
Like right now, I fell down a Suits hole and now I'm a little upset that it ended at eight seasons, even though.
Oh, wow.
I too said it should have ended at season five or whatever. But are you satisfied with that particular arc, like those 118 episodes, or do you feel as though there was more in it? Because I'm not too sure. By the time you guys ended,
Max was pregnant, right? Wasn't that how it ended? Yeah. Max pregnant, and with her going, Kyle going to get together, and then Khadijah goes off to another country to be with Scooter or something.
Yeah, well, that was just them wrapping it up. We didn't even really cast together like it was. You know, TC wasn't really there. That was my comedy partner. That's like I'm dancing with Fred Astaire and Ginger, and suddenly I ain't got nobody to dance with.
He has loved watching y'all dance.
Yes, there you go. Yes. We had a Dallas, and we had Mel Williams, and things like that were starting to be incorporated. I think that it was, again, it found its peak and was starting to round over. You need everybody to be engaged. We're saying very intentional words of writers, and they are there building these characters in these worlds. And if they're not as engaged, then we can only do, we're like puppets. We can only do so much.
I have one last Living Single, which is totally just off of character, but I got to know. One of your directors of the show, John's his first name, J.D. Lube. That sounds like a weird porn name.
That's a real name.
Are you familiar with J.D. Lube? L-O-B-U-E?
No.
I would imagine that on a sitcom, there are a gazillion directors or whatnot. I wanted to know. I know you're looking like, who the hell is that? Well, no. J.D. was sort of the longest director of Soul Train, which I'm absolutely obsessed with. And so the moment that I felt that Soul Train jumped the shark-ish, he had left to go do Living Single. But, you know, I always just wanted to know what was he like as a director, but you don't remember.
Sorry, we ruined your show. you got a right to go on, Quest. Listen.
My question is actually, in sitcom world or in television world, can you explain to me? It's weird that the director isn't consistent from soup to nuts. Like in most comedies, they have different directors come in and direct. One, do you know generally why that's a rule? Like, why isn't there just one director and one writing staff? I know staff writers can change throughout the seasons or whatnot, but what is the deal with like having multiple directors for a series? Like, why is that?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure, but I would imagine that it keeps the show from getting stale. They're also performers' favorites. Some people don't gel with the performers. And if they notice a change, or they might want to mix it up so people don't get disrespectful and start just doing what they want, sometimes it keeps you on your toes. It depends on your cast. If you have a problematic cast or somebody at the lead that's a tough one, you mix it up. I don't know. I just think that energy, that new energy is important. But our shows were mostly directed by Ellen Gittleson, and she knew us very well. So I actually have seen it both ways. I've always been happy with new directors sometimes because I know people are getting a chance to build their resume. I'm really relieved to see somebody I've worked with over and over again because I don't explain myself. And they know what you're capable of. So they also pull you back if they're saying, oh, come on, Erica. Like I wanted to do a whole scene on the floor and they wouldn't let me. And I said, why? You can hear me. But, you know, fine, I'll sit up. I was pissed. But that was a director I knew. So I didn't feel like I was pushing it. It's just that these things happen. So I think on a drama, I would say it's because you get burnt out. You can't be the same director. You have to prep and do each show, and each show you have to prep. And so it's tough. But I think with comedy, you're more likely to get return directors who are, for the most part, doing most of the shows because the cast and the writers know that they can pull it off in time.
For you as an actor, is there a particular, like in terms of comedic acting versus dramatic acting, is one more exhausting or kind of strenuous than the other? How did it differ
for you? No, I never thought about that. Okay. I'd never have. I haven't, again, I don't have the luxury of choosing my roles. And I think that people think that you can. I took the roles that I got. And yeah. If I didn't do well, I tried to do better the next time. So I got dramas at first, and I was known as a drama girl for a very long time, excuse me. And then I got comedy, and suddenly people were like, oh, you're a comedian type. And they didn't know I did drama. They were surprised. I'm like, are you kidding? That's what I grew up in. And then I do podcasts, and I do this or that. But what I'm really trying to do is make a living, make a life.
Let's talk preach, about it. Preach.
Yeah.
I do remember you in the book that Alex Haley didn't get to finish, Mama's...
Mama Flores Family.
Yes. Okay. Sorry. It was with Cicely Tyson.
I got a black
Emmy
for that, you know.
Remember those?
There was
only
a black Emmy?
And they gave me and Cicely Tyson a black Emmy. And anybody that has it from that award show, it never was done again. I have an Emmy. It's a black Emmy.
But it was a black Emmy. It was a black Emmy show, right? Oh, not a black Emmy section. It was a black Emmy show.
It was a black Emmy award show because they weren't giving black awards.
And B-Got.
Yeah. I ain't B-Got no weapon.
Wow. Wait,
how come I didn't know this?
Nah, I didn't know that.
It's a real
I remember.
It's a real thing. It only happened once. I'm sure they got sued. CD dismiss letter. But I got one.
See, that's why we got to keep telling history and telling these stories. Because people wouldn't believe shit like
that. I slipped under the cracks.
When you said that, I thought you meant like, NAACP award. I didn't realize that there was.
That's the great Felicia Rashad has no Emmy. 8 years on the top show in the world. Helped create must-see TV. They weren't giving black people any awards. They complained now. I'm like, it was a drought and a dearth. So they created the black Emmys, and I have one.
Yo, not to move fast forward, boss, but in my mind, I'm like, so when somebody said to Erica, we got this role for you and Get Out, she must have been like, oh, hell yeah. Like, just get all this shit. Like, oh.
I like to choose great material, and then you find it great material chooses you.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
So I read the part and thought, oh, this is lovely. But frankly, I thought it was a college student's film.
Okay, what? So check it. So listen. I often wondered more with Us than Get Out. I obsess with how something looks on paper before it even gets to the screen. Fonte and I sort of had this debate before, especially with Us.
Yeah, I wasn't big on Us. I didn't.
Right. I liked Us, but I also chose to invest 8 watch throughs. And if you have to watch something 8 times to see
probably a time that
Easter eggs or whatever, I still enjoyed it because, you know, I like looking for Easter eggs and mystery and whatever.
No, 100%.
But Get Out to me on screen was amazing to behold, but I always wondered,
what did that script look
how
like?
Did it look on paper at the time, and did anyone see what was coming? And the fact that you played such a straight role in it, I was like, I'm glad she, because when you came, I was like, oh boy, it's about to turn up now. But they didn't let you really put your teeth into it. But I don't know if you were fine with that.
Well, one thing, I thought it was a comedy. I
in
did think it was a comedy.
It was.
Yeah. I did.
In some ways it was.
Remember, right. My scene is only between me and Little Rail.
Right.
He comes and he tells this outrageous story, and then I bring in my team and we laugh at him. And that's it.
Yeah.
But at first, I am supposed to look like I'm about to get into it. We're going to ratchet it up.
So yeah.
Jordan always told me when I came on the screen beside people going, hey, that's Max. Oh my God. They were like, okay, now something's going to happen.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right.
That's going to happen. So he would joke and say, we need to make a Detective LaToya movie because they love that character. And that's when I started thinking about the Pink Panther, somebody who is a hapless person who stumbles into success, but it's not because they're looking for it. So no, on the paper, it looked exactly like it looked. Only Jordan knew how it was going to go. And unless you were part, imagine, you know, they were fantastic actors they had all around. And they were cutting people's brains open. And you know what I mean? And replacing them. So I wonder if they thought, hey, this is an interesting thing. Let's go do it. He's a great guy. That's what I thought. I love Jordan Peele. But I can assure you, I had a call from a friend, my co-founder, Ben, at Color Farm here. And he says, yo, E, I just saw the trailer. Didn't you say you were in a comedy? This is a horror film. And I said, it is.
Wait, even then you didn't realize where he was going with it?
Nope.
Because you didn't get to read the whole thing. Did you just read your scenes?
I read my scene. But not only that, it was during the election. And I was Hillary Clinton's most traveled surrogate.
That's right.
I was on the road with my sister. And so,
thank you for your service.
And I was doing also at the same time Queen Sugar. And I was playing there a bipolar
character. That's right. Yeah.
So I had flown in from Baton Rouge straight to Alabama in one night, did all of those things, then went to Harlem for a rally for Hillary. I did it all like this without even looking. Sometimes you just have to go forward. And that was one of those moments.
Wait, now I'm thinking,
you didn't even know it was a comedy.
But wait. So did you ever go and sneak into a theater and hear the reaction of people when you come on the screen? Did you get to feel that?
Yes, I did get to feel it once. And it was really...
Once? You know, okay.
Once. Yeah,
my first time seeing it, I saw it in Detroit, so it was all the way live.
Very different.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I watched that film 12 times and purposely chose various... I chose the whitest theater in Denver, Colorado, where the film was absolutely silent in parts that... And then I saw, I went to Magic Johnson to see
An
Evening Dog. And that's when I was like, oh.
Now that's where it's a comedy. Like, that's, it's right. A totally different movie.
It's a totally different movie.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. 'Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you gotta change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? Well, no, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. NPR has a new collection of podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy and resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Megan Thee Stallion to the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Michelle Obama to the women behind the Montgomery bus boycott, there's no limit to the range of NPR. Black perspectives haven't always been censored in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and Black as the country they reflect. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Now that I think about it, there's another iconic film role you did. I'll be very brief, but can you talk about Toni Braxton's You're Making Me High video.
Oh my God.
Let's go.
Can you just talk? I think that was maybe the last time. Like, once you're in the industry, you just watch things different. Mm. But I do remember, well, one, I was happy because if you were around in the 90s, whatever, Bryce Wilson's
Groove Theory.
Kind of, yeah, Bryce Wilson, his, and I'm understating this, his adoration for Toni Braxton was well known throughout circles. So the fact that he got to play in that video, like, I was like, yo, he's made his crush and love for
the stalker Juan.
Right, exactly. Very, very much known. And so when this sort of came to fruition in a video, whatnot, like, I actually found myself watching the video as like a fan, not an industry person, even though I experienced everything, listening to records, watching videos, whatever you do, like, you see it different once you're in it. But to me, that looked so much fun. I was like, wow, like, they were having the time in their life. What was it like?
I was pretty intimidated.
Really?
Yeah, because, I don't know, Tisha Campbell once asked me about this. She said, Erica, we don't see you out much. You don't go out. And I came in the business when there were no ingenues. There were no going out. There were no young women yet performing, and they didn't have many roles for young women. So I didn't come in hanging out. And even though I came up in the hip hop era, and there's Wu-Tang and this and that, and I'm in LA, it was dangerous to go out. You get cat in the ass.
Yeah.
And so you just didn't hang out. And so that was the first time me meeting those people. And so to me, I was a fan, and suddenly here I am, and they're like, they want me to be in that video with Toni Braxton and next to Vivica Fox and blah, blah, blah. And I kind of shut down a little bit when I'm intimidated. And so I tried to just do what they told me to do. I didn't necessarily know how a music video was shot. It was a learning experience, and I was glad to be there. But for the most part, I was, if you didn't know I was in there, you wouldn't know I was in there.
When I think of it, I think of you first, and maybe I think of Tisha Campbell. Like, yeah. But yeah, no. When you're there, we notice.
You see me? Thanks.
Always.
Yeah, man, we notice.
I wanted to ask about Queen Sugar. You talk about, you know, shows that didn't get Emmys or recognition. What was it like working on that show? Because that was just such a beautifully shot show and beautifully lit, like, you know, it was just a beautiful show to watch. Like,
and why do they not enunciate words?
Ralph Angel.
I blame Ralph Angel for me now having subtitles on my title.
Ava does everything with intention. Ava DuVernay came in this world with a black power sign stamped on her breast in the front. It's her shield, and it's her mantra. And I think that you see that as an expression of love. And she wants to rebrand black people. That's what I want to do. She wanted to show a family that had land. We came in and we worked the land, but we didn't own that land. And once we owned the land, we were sharecropping for that land. And then we were thrown off the land, and now they say we're not country, and we are country. So there's all these things mixed into Queen Sugar. She's talking about money, ownership. She's talking about family. She's talking about generational trauma. She's talking about politics. Yeah. She's talking about real estate. She's talking about all these things. And she did it. So I bravo to her. And that's what it was like. You knew when you walked on that you were contributing to something that had very little to do with you, but more to do with how could we tell this story about a generational family that owned land.
Did you see your work in American Fiction? You mentioned like rebranding black people. Did you see American Fiction as an extension of that?
For sure. I mean, Court Jefferson is made for the moment. I mean, you have to understand, American Fiction is a satire. Okay, let's mention the great Jeffrey Wright. You just got one of the best actors of all time to do it. But that character wants to be free of a narrative that's been keeping him in the cheap seats. He's a spectator in his own life. And his reality, our reality, is much more complicated and complex than the narratives that drive the market. And so we have a problem with these stories that endure because Black people have been amazingly successful by catering to those forces. And they've successfully produced, they've supported and these impoverished narratives. But this very durable and very self-sustained universe is rejected. So that's the question. Why do we see Black people locked in these stereotypes? And has Blackness become a victim of its own success? And that's what that movie is about. When you're playing a narrative that you don't own, and yet you push it out so you can be successful. I'm surprised we haven't all gone batshit crazy.
Who said we ain't?
I think we have.
You right, we have.
Well,
I think we have.
We have.
But I also feel like, well, I'm under the impression that the reset of 2020 is what actually allowed us to recharge and come forth. But yeah, I too wonder that. Can I ask you something though? Because it's been a minute since a movie sparked any type of conversation. Especially with me, like I'll see a movie and like, okay, yeah, it was dope or whatever. You know, the ending of American Fiction, or at least I would, and we should probably have Cord on the show.
Yes.
We should have Cord on the show. So here's the thing. With the last 15 minutes of the show, without spoiling the movie for people, was talked about. And the thing was, I told the group of people I went to see it with, I said, look, they could have easily did a Hollywood ending where all's well that ends well. Now, for me, the ending of that film was much akin to, like, you remember, like, maybe the first 7 Spike Lee films really never ended?
Yeah,
right, it just never ended. Yeah, but even think of Do the Right Thing. Like, it wasn't Happily Ever After. Mo Better Blues was quasi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nah, well, he found love, but he lost his gift. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And for me, the ending of American Fiction was not only, I felt, the right choice of an ending, but, I mean, as a person, and I know I'm not alone, like, I often find myself in that ending where sometimes you're just like, all right, fuck it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And even though it wasn't the ideal Hollywood ending, I felt that was the most
realistic,
ending. Yeah. And for those that were just like, yo, man, what do you think about the ending? And I felt like
how that shit go.
That was the truth.
Yeah.
And it's the sad truth. Did you guys sort of wonder that, like, in the film of how it ends? Because even for me, I was wondering, like, okay, when the big revelation happens, is it redemption for all of us? Is it? In my mind, I started predicting, oh, how's this shit going to end? I can't wait for this shit to end. And when it ended, I was like, yeah, I guess that's how it ends. How did you feel about that at the time? And was that ever a subject of discussion? Were there alternate endings shot for it? Or
I knew the one I was in. I was in 2 of them. The happy ending and the more tragic ending.
Wait, time out. You're talking about American Fiction? Or
Yeah.
Oh, because you also, I don't know if you inadvertently know this, I didn't realize that Get Out also had 2 endings as well.
Oh yeah, the alternate ending it showed. Yeah,
but you
okay,
saw.
So I didn't know this. I didn't know this had. Okay,
yeah, we saw 3 of ours in the movie.
Included.
In
American Fiction. It was like, felt like it was Clue. Yeah.
Yeah. Get Out never showed you other endings. Mm-mm. But I think we have to just take it from the point of view of an author.
Okay.
And the author has posited this question that. And this can be metaverse, by the way. You appreciate this. You guys are all nerds.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That when Jeffrey starts to sip his cognac and write the movie, he goes into a metaverse and makes me wonder, what movie are we watching? Is it still his real life? Or is it something he's writing?
Wait, was that an Easter
that
egg I missed?
Third ending, right? You're saying that was the third ending that we didn't see? The fourth ending that we didn't see? Or that's just
I'm saying that there's a lot of things that switch and start to be different once we see Keith David and Oates start to perform. Yeah. We start to get the idea that he can manipulate his reality through his fiction. So I think we need to ask the original source material, Percival Everett.
Mm-hmm. Erasure.
Because maybe an erasure, exactly. Maybe that's where the true ending lies. But they shot the ending you saw after we were all gone. So I was surprised to see the ending.
Oh, man. Okay.
So Core needs to come in here and stand and deliver because he confused us all.
Yeah. Yeah, one of my favorite things about that film was I liked how it showed relationship, romantic relationships, black romantic relationships with people of different ages. You know what I'm saying?
Generational,
like,
Generational,
yeah, that was so beautiful. Like you and Jeffrey, but then also, I forgot the name, but the older-
Leslie Uggam.
The housekeeper lady.
Leslie Uggam. Leslie Uggam
is a boss.
Listen, I mean, even Deadpool alone, I'm like, the fact that she pulls American Fiction to Deadpool, she's fucking amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's a Mac. And I got to share a green room with her and get all those stories. These people are walking around.
Yeah.
She with such genius inside of them. It's such the blueprints to our lives and to the future. And she's one of them. So Leslie Uggam is excellent. And you're right. Yeah. That Who was and some the housekeeper. Of the other... Remember the housekeeper's story?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. The housekeeper and the security guard.
Yeah. But you know what it's trying to give truth to the lie? That black people don't have generational stories. That we only exist inside of the generation we're in. And we're not having this back and forth communication, wisdom, and also building and architecture in our lives. And it's so normal in that movie.
Yeah, I literally got like emotional watching you and Jeffrey because it's just something that we just don't see. But seeing you in that role and seeing you get a chance to show love in that way, like you, like seeing you as the actors that we know play that role was so important and kind of, I think I'm not the only person that got emotional over seeing you just in that role.
No, people have said that. I get to meet Cute. I get to meet like Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. I drop my tomatoes. And did we talk over wine? I mean, imagine that.
And you're
we're not jumping each other's bones. I've got lotion afterwards. After we do our little do. It's a seduction.
And you think high enough of yourself to be like, I don't have to be there here.
No,
get your shit together.
You confused. Don't bring that chaos. Don't disturb my peace. She's not pining for him. She just let go of a relationship, and I'm sure it was difficult for her. So what she took to regain that kind of stability, she wasn't willing to give it up for his drama. And that's self-empowerment. And it was lovely. It wasn't mean or angry. It was just sort of like, you gotta go.
Erica, please tell me what it's like going back and forth and playing this game with Jeffrey Wright. Like, what is it like in a scene? Like, what? He's it. And then talk about Sterling, okay.
Well, Jeffrey is a nerd too. He only watches documentaries. He doesn't watch TV, but he knows all the references. So he would get along with all of you guys.
We got.
He's from DC.
Yeah, it's long overdue. Yes.
You know those DC light skinned brothers.
Me too.
They were free before us all. There you go.
But he's from Southeast though. He went to Anacostia High School.
Okay. So you know who you are. Yes. He loves his mother and he loves his auntie who raised him. He's a great lover of women, black women. And he understands it. So he's not intimidated by me. He doesn't think that I'm a threat. And in fact,
what did it feel like to y'all? Yeah.
Well, he feels like he's taking care of business. Wow. This is a man that's respected on set and he understands what he's there to do. But here's what he's not there to do. He's not there not to make mistakes. So he's trying things and experimenting. He's frustrated, but you can see he wants a certain result. And he's going for it. So I like somebody who was expectation is high, but he's like, that's your expectation. I came on here to be an actor and make my mistakes like everybody else and put it together. And it reminds you that you have to give yourself grace. Everybody can expect you to be perfect, but that's not what you're here for. And that's who Jeffrey is. And once he gets permission to do those things, he gives everyone else permission, and then the set runs.
When you are paired with an acting partner that you know that you're your characters sort of connected to? Are there conversations beforehand or of what the chemistry is going to be? Because I've heard, and I'm asking this as a new director and as a director that hasn't done scripted yet, I've talked to a lot of directors and they've told me ideal stories of like these actors and the ones who gravitate towards. I've heard nightmare stories of established actors who, you know, this actor will only give you two takes. And if you don't got it, tough titties, that's your fault. I don't give a fuck. Next scene, that sort of thing. Is it a speed dating process? Like how long? Because the thing is that one with Jeffrey, but also your relationship with what's his name?
Sterling?
No. I'm going back to Bobby. To Wu-Tang.
Oh, RZA.
Oh, rapper. Yeah, Wu-Tang. Yeah.
Who's playing him?
Sanders.
Ashton Sanders.
Ashton Sanders is on Invasion 2.
Oh, it's gonna be a good okay. season.
That's what's up.
Yes. I'm wondering how long is the speed quote air quote speed date process between you and the actor to know, like, to at least get to know each other, or is this just like cold, like you automatically know what to do?
So I want to first say something about the bad behavior that they might be speaking to. I have not experienced that, and I've been in showbiz 40 years. So I've been a little bit, I don't know, I give a little side eye to the stories because I think that people attract certain things because they put either, oh, that person must be in that role, knowing that the person is problematic, instead of giving somebody who can do the role just as well and not give those type of problems. And so everybody has a reputation. No one is operating in a vacuum. So if they're experiencing that, I think it's hard for you not to know where an actor lands. And you have to consider, do you really want that? Because that could be, that can ruin you. A bad attitude can ruin everything. The crew, everything. So I haven't experienced that.
Okay.
I've experienced some issue with younger actors because they haven't been properly trained. And I'm not talking about on stage because I only did a very small amount of training. I mean, no one tells them the truth and they get away with bad behavior and there's no consequences. If somebody did that on my set, I would replace them almost immediately.
Yeah, so when you have to check a young actor, what do you say? Like, how do you check them?
You take them aside. You don't embarrass them. Mm-hmm. You ask them if there's something wrong, because sometimes they can come to set and there's something wrong. And you ask them if they need help. You have identify somebody they can talk to. It could be another actor who's willing to mentor them and they can be open, honest with, and vulnerable. It could be a psychiatrist. They could just be scared and not know how to say it. They may need help with lines and they're freaking out. Get them a dialogue coach. Get them the help they need. They'll calm down. They also need sleep. And some people are not giving these people sleep.
No, she's right.
Wait a minute.
Working these kids.
You know what's
true? They're more soft than we were.
That is actual and factual.
Thank you.
Yes.
But I'm saying that all those things are playing a part. So that's what I would say. Yeah. I first maybe see them. And then I might have a conversation outside with their manager or agent. And not to scare them, but they need warning. That is, and they need to know that you're on their side. If it continues, then you need to start looking into it right away and reshift your schedule to shoot things they're not in.
Did you have any OGs who did that for you? Like who gave you that?
Didn't need to.
Game when
you
were
coming
up? I
came into the set pristine. I'm a preacher's daughter. I know how to act. And I'm from Girls High. Yeah. I've studied, I know, and I'm learned. And if I was scared, I may not have known who to talk to. That's true. I think I experienced a lot of trauma because I couldn't really tell what I was feeling. But that came later on in life. But I didn't have problems showing up, knowing my lines, being prepared. We did 26 shows a year. Now people do 10 and they freak out. I'm learning to play a week. No, I ain't got no problem.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. 'Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? Well, no, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at Airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo! Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again!
Platoon, present cell phone. High Five!
High Five!
Casino!
Casino!
Win at HighFiveCasino.com!
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
All right, this just hit me right now. When you started saying those words,
mm-hmm.
like, is something wrong? And da-da-da-da, can I help you? Da-da-da-da. You know something I just realized? Shirley Ralph just sunned me. And I'm realizing it right the fuck
hey,
now.
Hey, baby.
Oh, yeah, she sunned you on
damn.
Average.
Oh, damn.
You too. I love that
she
voice.
She pulled me to the side. She said, hey, are you a little nervous right now? And I was like, and it just hit me. I got the... quasi-defensive. No, I'm cool. I'm cool. I'm all right. I'm good. No. Listen. You're good. Just breathe. And say it a little bit slower. No. And she like, now do it. And I was like, and I just realized, oh, shit.
I was fucking up.
I was that person. I didn't realize it until you said that.
But Amir, she did that with respect. What she was trying to do was give you permission. And if you said to her, yeah, I'm a little nervous, then it goes away. You know how if you say something, you can lean into it because everyone's nervous. Mm-hmm.
But the thing was that in my mind, like when you said that, then I'm like, okay, you're an experienced actress. You could tell when a newbie doesn't know any better or they might be doing something wrong or da 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 da. And I'm now realizing that maybe the first three takes that I did, because, you know, they do shit over there like 9 times in a row. So now I'm realizing my first 4 takes were like, he's not getting it. And they kind of have this magic circle thing. You know, when people are together and they just look at each other and you know you're being talked about, but no one's saying it. Like, I felt like, oh, maybe there's something on my teeth or.
Damn, how many lines you have, Amir? Was it like a lot?
It was rather significant.
Nice.
And so. She was the designated.
She's the leader of the group chat.
Damn.
But who better to do it than an elder sister who was like, I got you, baby.
Who was in the Mighty Queen, cuz. Like,
you know what I'm saying?
Yes, but I'm thinking that a lot of the, I don't know if you did a read-through and all that, but some of these things
I did. I came in cold.
Yeah, and that's the issue. You're fitting into their world, and you're trying to take it all in all at once, and you're also trying to do all this other stuff. By the way, any guest... featured performer has that extra burden. So I think that she was just giving you permission, but she wasn't definitely sunning you. She was just sort of like a big sister going.
Yeah. Oh, no. Cool. I didn't mean, let me make it clear. Yes, she wasn't sunning me disrespectfully.
Not in a negative
at all.
Way, yeah.
Yeah, but I think maybe because I only enter situations that I know like the back of my hand. Like if it were music or that sort of thing, it's like, I'm not saying you can't tell me nothing, but, you know, this is definitely an area that is not my expertise.
Well, in your world, you're king. It's hard to come in spaces and you direct and you do all these things, and then you're put in a position where suddenly it's like, oh, okay, wait a minute. I'm not on, but again, you're an artist. So she approached you as one, and that's respectful. And it wasn't a matter of whether you could do it. It was a matter of sort of saying, breathe. You know who told me that? Cecily Tyson. She said, Erica, breathe.
Yeah.
Breathe. Yeah. When these sisters tell you, it sounds ridiculous. Like, I am breathing, bitch. Shit. But, you know, but they're trying to remind you to be in your body. right. But also to give you permission that you ain't got to be perfect. And she, yeah. I've been told that by Whoopi. I've been doing, and these people are, I'm there for those Wu-Tang kids to come up and say, you're tired. You're not getting your sleep. Okay. So let's get you some water. You know what I mean? Stand up, shake your body. Let's go outside and get some sun. And I remind them that they're human. They're not a freaking robot, but they're talented. And that's why they're there. And they need to not think about the talent. Just think about being present. Yeah. And it's all
those
right to have that.
Amazing. You know, those young actors are amazing. Space.
But I do want to say something to what you said. You asked about, you know, how do you
talk to your scene partner?
You don't usually. When I say you don't usually, unless you need to, I'm at a point where, for the most part, if somebody needs to talk to me, they'll take me aside. So, Erica, I'm not sure about this scene. I don't know where it's headed, but I think this and that. What do you think? And I said, I don't know. I don't know, Jeffrey, but I'll follow your lead. He goes, okay, we'll work it out. And then it's just one of those things where, in a way, he's just confessing that maybe hasn't settled on how the scene goes, or and I know to be ready for changes. And he's just putting me on blast, but also not on blast. He's giving me a heads up, but he's also telling me, support me, look out for me. And I'm glad when somebody says that, because I've said that, by the way, when I was on Queen Sugar, I had medication because I have colitis. And sometimes it's a steroid. It can make you feel like really, like if you get emotional, everything feels heightened, like you can faint. And so I told Omar, who plays
Omar Dorsey, that's from Hollywood.
I said, Omar, I've got to do this emotional scene. And if I get overwhelmed and faint, because I said, you got to tell them I'm all right, but you know what happened. He says, I got you, girl. I got you. And once I did that, I actually calmed down. And I was able to do the scene because I wasn't worried about fainting. That's what it is. The director can't sometimes give you that kind of confidence because that's the person you want to impress. And you sometimes don't want to be too friendly with the performers, but you do have to make a connection with them that they're not there to hit a line, a bar, a this and that, and that you enjoy their mistakes. Or that was fun. Give them encouragement, and don't give them encouragement just because they get it and cry. Just say thank you. Each time say thank you for whatever they give you. It's no different thank you for the crying than if they don't do it. And then they say, okay, they're not making a big deal out of it. I can be whatever and still get approval. The actors will do anything for you because they know they can't fail.
I want to ask about the Wu-Tang show, which I loved. How did you get that role? And did you actually meet RZA's mom before you?
No,
before
she's
you
passed
did it?
Away.
Oh, man. Oh, I didn't know that. I'm sorry.
So
man.
Long story short, I love the Wu-Tang, but at the time I didn't think it was a role for me. I didn't know if I wanted to be a mother of all these big ass kids. And
well, you look like you could be their sister on the camera. So, I mean, it's like kind, real.
But I didn't know. So I didn't really step up for the audition because there was an audition. And they said, Erica, they keep coming back to you. Would you? And I said, all right. So I did. And they said, well, RZA wants to meet you. And I said, oh, I don't know if I wanted to go any further. And I don't want to lead anybody on. But I decided, you know what, Erica, go on, do what's in front of you. So I met him. And RZA's very, you know, charismatic and lovely and respectful. And I did my thing, and he said, after I got the part and I accepted it, because I did get it, that, you know, there's only four represented in the show, but I got 11 brothers and sisters, including me. And they all had to say you were okay to play our mother.
Wait, what?
So that's how I got the role.
What an honor.
Because the whole real Wu-Tang clan.
The real clan.
The family. With the stamp of approval said, Erica can play Linda Diggs. So then I learned about their mother, and their mother had experienced abuse. And it's one of the reasons why they think she died. She was married twice, And unfortunately, she experienced domestic abuse, which is portrayed in there. Yeah. So I knew that it was something very special that RZA wanted me to project. So I said to her, and I'm not very religious, but I'm spiritual, I said, Miss Linda, your children want to see you. You show me the way. And then I didn't do anything because I knew they'd already seen what they wanted. And I just needed to not perform. I needed to just get out of the way and let her be there. And to me, she's a ghost in that series. Yeah. RZA wanted to see his mother, so he wrote her in. I didn't. I fulfilled the need.
Yeah. Wow. Were you a Wu-Tang fan prior to the show? Like, did you listen
to
Wu-Tang?
I'm a Wu-Tang fan, not as much as everybody. I didn't know their music as much, but I'm a Wu-Tang fan because I really love how intellectual they are. I love Method Man, and I like men who are working it out, and they're individualists again. They're individualists, and then they decide to come together to make a super group, and then their brand becomes bigger than them all. I love that kind of story.
Did you see, and I'm curious because it's a lot of great actors, great young actors in that cast. Do you see a couple of them as like leading in the future? Like the next, like not the next, because they're doing their thing, but.
Julian Elijah Martinez.
Brilliant. Who plays?
He played my son.
Oh,
he played the elder.
He played Divine.
He's on Law & Order sometimes.
He's Divine. Yeah, he killed it. He looked like Divine for real.
He does look like Divine.
Yeah, he bodied
it. Yeah.
And Sadiq Saunders is there, of course, Ashton Sanders. There you got Marcus Callender. They're genius performers. And Elijah is on fire. There is not enough film or television to absorb this talent. And my goal is to find ways so they can show the world what they can do. We've got more talent than we've got content for them to be in. So yeah, look out. All of them are wonderful. I love them all.
I have one last question. Erica, I need the face routine. I need, what's your face routine? What's your, the skin, what's the skin routine? Like, you said gin and tonic.
Yeah, juices and berries.
Oh. No, thank you for that. I had a huge breakout because I came here and started eating stuff I didn't know. But you know what I think? I really appreciate that. When you saw me in person, you see the lines. You see.
No, that's not true. I just saw you a couple weeks ago. Don't tell tales.
Well, you know what? Black does crack. But I think if you keep yourself smiling and laughing about things, I think people see the brightness in my face, really, and the openness. And I like to believe that I can still be young and enthusiastic and not jaded and not tired. I'm enthusiastic after 40 years to be here, and I know what it feels like to be tired. But Harriet wasn't tired until she was tired, so I'm all right.
Damn, you going by Harriet standards? Shit.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. That's in your DNA. I'm good. By the way, I don't believe in all this hustle. I get your sleep, get your rest. It's important.
Listen.
Read and go outside and let the sun hit you and listen to the breeze. Take off all the things and just... let the ambient noise get to you.
I don't think I've ever had an episode where I don't want to say goodbye to the person. No. Once again, thank you so much for coming on our show. And this is definitely, you know, it's a dream for us. We talked about this for a long time of having you.
And shout out your organization, please, because when you say you're trying to uplift these people and these creatives, you're doing it in real time. Please.
Color Farm Media. We call ourselves the most town of film, television, and tech. We are trying to change the face of media and rebrand blackness. We produced John Lewis Good Trouble. I co-directed the reparations documentary, The Big Payback. Yeah. We are doing a Diane Carroll documentary. We are also doing collaborations, partnerships in the scripted space as well. So remember us, Amir. And for everyone there, we appreciate your support because we don't have a deal. We just work really hard. And we got the DuPont Columbia Award for something we did called Finding Tamika, which was the top true crime audio series that I created and wrote. And I really am very proud of that because we're talking about missing white women syndrome. And to do it, we use this black girl's life to show Tamika. She was used as the discussion around it. And we made a neo-noir ghost story. And we thought it was lovely, and their family was lovely to let us do it. But Amir, I want to say something to you.
Yes.
You are not only a goat, you're a person who is in power to empower.
And thank you.
I'm very gratified that you're from Philly. I see all the stuff that you do. When I say stuff that you do, the amazing things that you accomplish. But I also love that you have the curiosity, intellectual, and the deep dive that most people don't allow themselves to have. And so you're very generous with your mind and your brilliance. And I appreciate that, brother, because all the people
from Louis Armstrong,
all those people would recognize that you're their son.
Oh.
And so thank you all for creating this for us to have these long conversations, because
thank
I think
you,
we're also archiving history.
100%. Yeah.
You made it. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for making the
and
history.
Thank you for, yeah, man. Thank you for doing your shit.
Thank
real.
You.
Thank you.
I appreciate you. And
love you back.
That is probably the greatest ending of Questlove Supreme ever.
We could just get that plate of patties.
Yeah. Okay, yes. To let the world know, Patty invited me and the guy who sang about her pies and talked about...
Oh, B.
Oh, yeah, the viral guy.
Right. She invited both of us to her house for Thanksgiving, and I ate my ass off. It was awesome.
Oh, this happened. Like This
happened in 24, 10 years ago.
Oh, okay. Got you.
Yes. After a lot of begging.
Erica wants to be invited. Is that
I will get invited. You watch.
80th birthday. I'm saying we just make it a family affair.
Thank right. you, Dollface. I appreciate you. Bye, Fanta. Bye,
thank
love.
You.
Thank you. Thank
bye
you.
Bye, we'll job.
Be- I know you got some.
See you on the next go around, y'all.
Peace.
Thank you for listening to Questlove Supreme. This podcast is hosted by Amir Questlove Thompson, Boss Man, Laia St. Clair, So Blackity Black, myself, Fontigolo, Fonte Coleman, Sugar Steve Mandel, and unpaid Bill Sherman. Executive producers are Amir Questlove Thompson, Sean G, and the unbothered Brian Calhoun. Produced by Brittany Benjamin, my dog, Cousin Jake Payne, my motherfucking man, and Laia St. Clair, my work wife. Edited by Alex Conroy. Produced for iHeart by Noah Browning.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
The following is a High Five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
Welcome to Burger Yippee. Would you like a hot apple pie today?
Yes, yes, yeah, I won! Woohoo!
So that's a yes on the apple pie?
I just went big time playing High Five Casino on my phone. Real cash prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. Yeah.
So yes or no on the apple pie?
Woo! I won again!
I'll take that as a yes. Drive around.
Have you had your High Five moment today? Only at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.